Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Hot Topics, a fire service and EMS-based podcast hosted by HCAM TV in Hopkinton, Mass. Today, we are very blessed to have a rock star of the fire service with us, is Lynn Morahan, who's the deputy chief, the first career deputy chief in the town of Ashland. And Lynn, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Kenny. It's my honor to be here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. The scope of this podcast is to share fire and EMS service-related experience of current and retired personnel on a multitude of local, regional, and national subject matter, operational items, and other pertinent fire service-related subject matter. One thing that we won't be doing is not in the intent of this podcast to second-guess or be the Monday morning quarterback for any operational decisions made by an incident commander. So we won't go down that street if that came up somehow. And it won't today, but some other ones, I try to say that every time. But my background is I was with Hopkinton Fire for 44 years, my last 7 as chief, and did a couple after I retired in January of 16, did an interim position with the town of Upton as chief, and then in July of 19, just as the COVID was starting, the phone rang, and it was the town of Berlin, up where the mall is, the other side of Marlboro, and they said, can you come help us for 2 or 3 months, and it ended up to be just shy of 4 years. Great, great fit. It was where we were in Hopkinton probably 20-something years ago. It just, you know, that's just the way where the community is. Great community, great people, very receptive to the fire department, and I was blessed. They were very nice to me. But today, we have Lynn here. I'm going to read her. It's got the most interesting bio I could ever get. Lynn and her family immigrated from Dublin, Ireland in 1986 when she was only 18 years old. Okay, and I can still remember when we first worked with Lynn at Ashland with the brogue came out sometimes. And I used to always smile because I loved the brogue. She joined the Ashland Fire Department as a call firefighter in 1993, worked full-time for Chalk Ambulance as an EMT, hired by Ashland Fire as a career firefighter EMT in 1997, and became a certified EMT paramedic in 2000. Trained and certified a canine and search and rescue dog called Dublin, who was, and correct me if I'm wrong, air scent, right?
That's correct.
You taught me that.
Yep.
Air scent rather than ground scent. And a lot of times you'll see the search dogs going with their nose on the ground. Dublin was trained to walk an area and get a scent and then turn into it when she got it. And we didn't use her a lot in Hopkinton, mm-hmm. but the concept was ingrained in me when you taught me that how she worked, and it was always a good resource. We just never got to use it in my time there.
Yeah.
I know she did a lot of work other places.
Yes.
Okay. And we'll get into that later. You can tell me about Dublin.
I'd love to.
Her canine worked for the state police and surrounding departments in missing person deployments. She was promoted to lieutenant in 2006. And this is what we'll get into detail later, is created Camp Bailout in 2009, which I was a huge fan of, and always detailed some of our personnel to help out in whatever capacity was needed by Lynn down there. Promoted to captain in 2017. She, congratulations on this, obtained her master's degree in 2020.
Yeah.
And then currently she's the initial career deputy chief for Ashland Fire, and works with very, very closely on a daily basis with Chief Roby down there, and she was promoted to deputy chief in 2022. And I think a really good thing to start on is tell me about Dublin. I remember you. She was like a magnet on your side wherever you went. It was like, sometimes you'd see the dog and Lynn's here someplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me here. It's a wonderful opportunity to do this podcast with you and to see you again. We go way back,
way
back. So it's awesome to see you and to be part of this podcast with you.
Thank you.
Dublin, yes. So what I noticed was that we were definitely lacking any kind of canine for the fire service within our Metro West area. So I approached the chief at that time, which was Chief Bill Key, and asked him would he be interested in supporting a canine for our department, and he was 100% behind it. So I was able to find a breeder with a dog that would be receptive to that. And we did the training, and we got her certified. Actually, the certification in Massachusetts is through the state police. So the state police actually do the examination, and then she gets on the state police list for volunteer dogs, so to speak. She accompanies the state police canines. If there's a search in the area, they call up the volunteers in that area, and they utilize those dogs. So once we did our training, got certified, then she was able to be deployed with all the surrounding communities. And we were lucky enough to do many, many deployments. And she was lucky to have 2 live finds, which was excellent for a dog like that. Her career spanned probably about 9 years working through the state police and with the departments, surrounding departments. And it was probably one of the most challenging parts of my career, but it was probably one of the most rewarding too.
Yeah.
And you're right. She was with me 24/7. She lived with me, as her handler, she went home with me, and then she came to work with me. And if we got deployed, we would leave. And the chief, again, was so supportive of it. He would allow me to leave on duty and go and get deployed so we could help other communities and the state police. So,
how far did you go with her? What's the farthest that you went out with?
We definitely went out west, maybe West Braintree or past Springfield.
Yep.
But yeah, we did training all over the place. And the big thing, like you mentioned, is Dublin was certified in scent and rescue. So with that, our training was at least 3 times a week, and we would train in all different state parks. We would have somebody go in and hide, and then the dogs on the team would individually take turns trying to find and locate that person. And they would just do it in the air. They would pick up the human scent, and then they would find that person, and then they would come back and do what we call an alert. And Dublin's alert was to pretty much sing to me. She would bark and jump at me. So it was her telling me that she's found somebody, yep. And then she would have to bring me to that person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yep. So it was, and as she was an Australian Shepherd, which was one of the reasons I picked that breed, because the dogs have to be able to work anywhere from 4 to 8 hours of deployment. And if you know anything about that breed, they're bred to be working dogs, yeah. To work on farms, to yep. work for 8-12 hours a day. So this was easy for her. Her training was easy. Her deployment was easy. She couldn't get enough of it. Yeah. So it was a really rewarding part of my, an extension of my career that I really enjoyed.
You.
Yeah.
I remember like watching you do that, and I'm like, oh, what a perfect thing to like.
Yeah.
It makes the, makes our community engagement, that it just increases it so much to be able to go out into the community and provide a service like that.
Yeah. And it was my honor to have that opportunity to train a canine. I think if you talk to any canine handler, they would voice the same thing, that it's such an honor to have the opportunity to train a canine and work and be the handler, because the dogs, what they can do is unbelievable.
Could you share with our audience the your camp bailout? That's another thing that was just like, and that's when I knew that you would be a rock star.
You
did that, just to bring all that together, the logistics of that.
Well, one of the first things I noticed a couple of years into my career, Kenny, was the very low percentage of women in the fire service and EMS. And I went to a leadership seminar one year, and they were spotlighting ways to recruit more women into the fire service, because at that time, women in general in the fire service, the percentage was as low as 4 to 5%. Even the military was higher than that. So the women of the fire service, the current women, were trying to find ways to recruit more women in. And they had come up with this format of these camps, these summer camps, that they would run for a week, 2 weeks, and it would be just designed for young girls. They would create these environments, safe environments for teenage girls to come in and to learn everything there is to know about the fire service, the EMS service. And the way that they formatted it was a fun way. It was a safe way. All the instructors were female firefighters or female paramedics or EMTs. So they were surrounded by women, so they felt very comfortable. I think that one of the things that was a challenge for me when I became a new firefighter was being surrounded by men all the time. So it's a little intimidating until I was lucky that I knew the guys because I worked part-time as a call person for 4 years before I got hired as a career firefighter. So the guys knew me and I knew them, but I could only imagine what it would feel like for a young female to go into an organization. You didn't know anybody and you were the first and only female there. It would be very challenging. And it would take a lot of confidence to do that. And as we know, teenage girls are not that confident when it comes to feeling good about themselves and being surrounded by in an environment that they're unsure of. So the camp was, I went back again to the chief once I saw the seminar and I pitched it to him to see what he thought. And he was so supportive of it at that
time. Doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. So we designed a program. I knew quite a few of the women in the surrounding communities. I reached out to them to see if they would be interested in coming in and be my support team. And they were hands down supportive. Chiefs like yourself were just as supportive, which really, really made the camp. Because I don't think if I didn't have the support of my own chief and the surrounding chiefs, I don't think I would have been able to move forward with the camp, especially for 10 years, which is how long the camp ran for. So we ran the camp for 5 days, a week in every summer, and it was a lot of fun. And we actually did have some young ladies that chose to follow the career path of either EMS or the fire department. In fact, one of my old campers is currently employed by Hockington Fire.
Which one?
That's Tyler.
No way.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Tyler.
Wait till I see her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
So that makes it all worthwhile for me when I see that. It's not all about firefighting and EMS. Part of the camp was to build up the girls, teenage girls' confidence in themselves. And by being surrounded by women that had that confidence, that was a big part of the camp, was being able to work together as teams. And, you know, you could see the leaders start to step forward. And it was great. From the first day to the last day, totally different.
Yep.
And it was really, really exciting for me and my team to see that transformation of the girls and their confidence.
I hope my granddaughters have an opportunity like that someplace down the road.
Yeah, I hope so,
not
too.
Not even if it's just fire service, but whatever, and be able to, and the cream rises to the top, and it's like...
Kenny, I have to say, I think that I enjoyed it just as much as the kids did every year. I got a lot out of it. And if I didn't have the support of my department at that time, I don't think I would. It takes a team. It absolutely takes a team and a village to put something together like that. So it ran for 10 years, and unfortunately COVID ended it. So, but there is other camps out there. A lot of states have them every year. So it's a great thing. And currently the percentage has gone right up to 9% of women. So the recruitment, they're doing something right. So it's pretty exciting.
And I think it's so important. And it was like, again, I came from a generation that didn't, there was no woman involved at all. Maybe you might get an EMT once in a while that would come in, but they didn't stay long. Yeah. And I thought it was so fantastic to get them to come in just be part of instantly become part of the team. Most of them want to be integrated in and just another face. That's
absolutely
all. It's that simple. It doesn't matter if it's male or female.
Absolutely.
If they do a fantastic job, and there's no way you can't be supportive of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just makes so much sense.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that the whatever town or community that you live in, I think the residents of that community really appreciate when they call the fire service that who shows up. Who shows up? The demographic of the firefighters is similar to the demographics of the community. Meaning, you know, it's nice if there's a medical emergency with a female, I think it might be more comfortable for a female to be part of that team. Initially, you know, it's a very stressful time when people have to call 911 or the emergency services. So having males and females responding, I think, is a huge asset.
Yep, completely agree. Yep. It's like just makes the team that much better.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yep. Absolutely.
What was the magnet that pulled you to the fire service? What made you come and, you know, you came from Ireland in 18, and all of a sudden, what was that magnet that brought you?
Yeah, so I wish it was one thing, Kenny, but if you would ask my mom, she said when I was 5 years old, I was asked what I want to be when I grow up, and I said I wanted to be a nurse. As I grew up, I did not have that same feeling. I thought I was going to get into physical fitness, go in that direction. But when I came over here, I was doing a bunch of different jobs. But I befriended somebody that was an EMT, and I found it very fascinating. Yeah. And she encouraged me to go take the class or the course, and I did that, and I loved every part of it. And once I got my certificate, I just kind of fell in love with emergency services. And at that time, I moved to Ashland from another community, and I was looking for experience. I started working for Chalk, and I was curious about the fire service because I saw that they had an ambulance at the fire station. So I went and introduced myself to the chief at that time and asked if they were looking for volunteers, and they took me in and hired me as a call volunteer firefighter. And as soon as I got my foot in the door and started to respond to motor vehicle accidents and the guys started to train me on the air packs and the fire side of it, I just got hooked.
Yeah.
I got a hooked, line, and sinker.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it was just, and I wanted more. I wanted to learn more. I would go to the academy, and they taught all sorts of classes, and I took advantage of that. And the more I learned, the more I wanted to learn more. So I guess it was just once I got my foot in the door, that was it. It was love at first sight.
Yeah, no, I can relate.
Takes, as you know, it takes a certain person to really be committed to it because it is a life-changing career.
Yeah.
But you, if it's right for you, it's right. Yeah. And it's really hard to leave it, as you know.
It was challenging for me.
Mm-hmm.
How did you make the transition from the EMT to the paramedic? How did that go for you?
Yeah, so it was. I'm not going to lie, it was pretty scary. As a basic EMT, you do basic life support, and as a paramedic, you take on a lot more responsibility because of the skills that you can perform. Thankfully, we work under the guidance of the emergency physician, so if there was any kind of questions, we always are able to communicate with them. But we were the first, I don't know if you remember back then, we were the first community in this area to go to paramedic level.
Yeah.
So the chief at that time decided that it was the right thing for us to do, and six of us went off to paramedic school together. So we were the inaugural group of paramedics for the town of Ashland. And so we were kind of all in it together, which was great. Always together in a team. I mean, that's the fire service, but it was a little scary. Once I got my certification with the other five members, we started to include it in the town, and it was very receptive, and we really, really were excited about it. And then Hopkinton came on board, and we precepted Hopkinton, so it expanded out, which was great.
Quickly, too.
Yeah, and because it's so important to be to get a lot of experience as a paramedic, keep your skills up. I ended up going and working for a private ambulance company too in Boston so that I would get more experience so that I would be a better paramedic for Ashland. So that was a bit of a transition, but we kind of all did it together. So it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah. Are you able to share some of your memorable incident responses, well, the stuff that sticks in your mind? Everyone's got them.
Oh,
it's
my
like
goodness.
You don't have to go into detail on them, and don't open the door if you don't want to. You know what I mean? I know, you, like I said earlier to Bill, it's like door is slammed shut and doesn't open much.
Well,
it's like,
we already touched on the opportunities I had with Dublin, my canine, but any time I was deployed within Ashland or even the local surrounding communities, that was really special for me and for those communities. I mean, we've had a lot of, through the years, I'm working on my 32nd year, so I've had a lot. I think I've forgotten more than I remember, but I've had the opportunity to deliver three babies, so that's always very exciting.
Yep.
And thank God everything worked out okay.
That's a good answer there. Thank you. Yep.
I think for me, what I love the most about the fire service over the years is the ability to work with the surrounding communities, the training that we do together. You referenced RIT training that we did many, many years ago. Those are the kind of things that stick in my head, mm-hmm. are the ability and the opportunity to train with your surrounding community in a less stressful environment, because we rely on each other on those stressful days. So forming those relationships in fun environments or training environments really is really important when those serious emergencies yep. come along, those fires, because we help each other. We can't do it by ourselves. No, in Ashland, day-to-day basis. I know that Hopkinton's the same way. Yep. So we're helping each other on a daily basis. So it's when we have opportunities to do those training events together, I think those are the things that are a lot of fun for me.
100%.
And stick in my mind.
No, there's no ice to break when you get there at 2:00 in the morning.
It's absolutely.
Like, it's a seamless going in.
Absolutely.
Whoever you get to sign with, seamless.
Yeah, absolutely.
You always like that. What are some of your interests and hobbies outside the fire department?
Well, being somebody that's a small female, it's really important for me to stay fit throughout my whole career. So I really enjoy working out.
Yeah.
We were both CrossFitters. Yep. I know that you hung in there. I end up having a little bit of a shoulder injury, so that kind of took me away from it. Yeah. But I've always enjoyed working out, being fit. I've always had dogs, so hiking has always been a big part of my time off.
Yeah.
As you read from my bio, I just got my master's degree a couple of years ago, so it's never too late to get your education completed. So that has been a little bit of a challenge of mine, a personal challenge over the last probably 10 years, going from my associate's to my master's degree on my free time, that I'm very proud of.
Where'd you do that?
I did it through Columbia Southern.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
So they're geared towards military and fire service.
Yep.
Which they were fantastic. Good. And I really enjoyed that whole experience of my education.
To your credit.
Yeah. So that was really good. What else do I like to do? Of course, I enjoy my friendships, both my friendships on the job, but outside the job too. Mm. Family, obviously, visiting family.
I want to thank you for spending a great day with us. I like to end each of my episodes. I get questions from the audience. They send to my email, and it's Hot Topics, HOTTOPICS at hcam.tv.
Yeah.
And I can, now there's a little bit of, we have a little bit of time left here, I can ask those questions and read those to the thing.
Sure.
And I got the first one from Mike and Ashland. What was the back step riding, and do they do that anymore?
Oh, my goodness.
Remember that? I don't know if you got that.
When I started, we had a Pierce Engine 1 and Engine 2, and we used to jump on the back. We also, the back seat was an open cab. So in the wintertime, before you jumped in, you had to clear the snow. And I don't even know if we had safety belts back then. But, it was fun. We didn't know any difference, so
exactly.
it was part of the routine of responding, and it was exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very exciting in comparison to nowadays. The truck won't even move until everybody's safety belted in. And I understand it, and I appreciate the fact
technology.
That it's all about life safety. But boy, was it fun back then!
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah.
You really felt the wind in your hair, and it was exciting. I think it enhanced the excitement of it. Plus, it was great for the people, the kids on the street. They got to see the fire engine go by, and they could actually see the firefighters, you know. So it was great.
Is that what's the world coming to when they put the straps on? So you had to strap up doing it then.
Yeah.
And then I can actually remember running, and the truck would be moving.
Now would be such a
negative thing to do and jumping up while you're putting your jacket on and the back step, and out it goes. You know what I mean?
You have to be fully dressed and everything before you get into the seat.
You'll be putting a jacket on, going up, climbing the hill here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know.
Times have changed, and it's for the better.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
This is a pretty good one. This one's from John in Hopkinton. Where does the water come from if I don't have a fire hydrant near my house?
Oh, okay. So other communities, they don't have fire hydrants, so they have two things. So we would utilize, or the community would utilize, lakes or reservoirs or even people's swimming pools.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing they have is things called cisterns, and they are basically big holes in the ground, and they fill the water department fills them with water, thousands and thousands of gallons of water, and the fire department comes in and hooks up to them, and then the water comes out, goes through the fire engine pump, and then they're able to utilize it through the fire hoses. Yeah. But yeah, it depends on the community.
Yep.
Yeah. But another way that they do is they find a water source and they create these like pools. They fill the pools full of water, and then the trucks, they do a shuttle.
Yep.
So the truck will the engine will go to the fire, empty out its water, then come back, fill it up with the tank, and then it's like a rotating basis.
Yep.
The engines just go back and forth, and they're able to continually fill the big pool of water from whatever source, whether it's the reservoir, a pond, or these cisterns.
Doesn't matter where it comes from.
Those communities that don't have hydrants, they train all the time. They've adapted to it, and it's part of their operational plan and emergency plan, so they are fantastic at it. They can get water out of any area quicker than some of us getting it out of the hydrant.
Yep,
but in Ashland and in Hopkinton, we're very blessed that we do have the hydrants. And we actually have wonderful pressure that come out of our hydrants in Ashland, which really helps us extinguish a fire.
I know my time when I was in Berlin, no hydrants. Everything was from a draft.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does.
Like you said, cisterns,
for you, as the chief, now you have to, operationally, you've got to think about things differently.
You've got to build the tenders into the run card.
Absolutely.
Which is something that we can, I get on a future list, we'll talk about run cards.
Yeah.
But it's like, it was almost culture shock going up there, and when I'm driving around, I'm like, I don't see any hydrants here.
No, I know, that's scary, for sure.
But we're very, very close to the end of time. I'd like to thank you.
Yeah.
For taking time from your very busy schedule to be here today. And it was a pleasure to have you. And like always, it's always great to spend time with you.
Well, Chief, it's my honor to come in and talk with you and all the people watching on TV. It's definitely been my pleasure. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Deputy. I call C2. All right. Thank you very much. And that ends today's episode. And if you, like I said before, if you want to have any questions for Hot Topics, it's hottopics@hcam.tv. And that's the end of episode number 4. Thank you very much. Have a great day and be safe.